I'm the last New York City woman to have ever won the New York City Marathon.
Could you imagine what it was like to not have women in marathons? It sounds ridiculous now, doesn't it? But could you imagine signing up and trying to register for the Boston Marathon, for example, and then someone attacking you during the race? It's madness. It really is. And I think that's what makes Catherine Switzer's story so amazing, like so incredible, that it hasn't been that long ago. I mean, given it's been a number of years, but it hasn't been that long ago that it was so absurd for a woman to register for a run, or for someone, a woman, to register for the Boston Marathon, for example, and for people to be outraged just because of her gender. It's incredible to me how far we've come in such a short amount of time. I am so grateful and humbled to have the opportunity to have someone like Catherine on the show, to get a chance to talk with her and listen to her stories firsthand of exactly what it is that she went through and to where she is now. My gosh, I don't follow her that closely, to be quite honest with you, but I think at the age of 70, she ran another marathon, and I think it was the Boston. I'm not sure, some of you in our audience might know better than I do, but it was such a cool experience to be able to meet her in person. I actually met her in New York City at the New York Marathon. We went there to see a friend of ours. We went there to support him. We go there once a year, in most cases, to visit family and friends. And it just worked out that he was running the New York Marathon. We wanted to go watch him. And the atmosphere was incredible. Those of you that have been to these big races know what I'm talking about. The people, oh my God. There's a lot of people in New York on a regular basis in general. But match that up with the New York City Marathon, and it was endless shoulder to shoulder. It was really difficult to watch. Like, we went to different places to watch our friend, but it was really difficult because they blocked off certain areas, and it was really challenging. Like, you couldn't just go on a walk and try to, you had to navigate through people and through barriers and through streets. So, but it was a really cool experience. But at a trade show, I bumped into Catherine Switzer, and we just had the conversation. We just talked, and I said, would you like to come on my show? She said, yes, of course, I'd love to. Very personable, very humble. She was a great individual. You're going to hear her throughout the interview talk about what it was like to be a pioneer, without question. She was a groundbreaker. She made a difference. She made her own tracks. So many women have followed her. And I would say that probably the world would look quite a bit different. I mean, I'd imagine someone at some point would be like, hey, this is not okay. But the point is that it was Catherine, and it took her courage and her strength to be like, I'm going to do this because it's the right thing to do. So we've got a great interview coming up. So I hope you enjoy. This is Drew. And you're listening to Transformations Through Running.
Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Great, Drew. It's great to be with you.
It's our absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. It was so great to actually meet you in person. I heard about you. I've been doing a little bit of running myself. I wouldn't call myself a runner, but I have some friends that run fanatically, and we've had some runners on the show before, but it was so great to see you in person. Again, I want to thank you for being here. It was so cool to see the lineup of people that are so excited to see you. What does that mean to you that people just can't wait to, you know, have a conversation with you?
Well, that was really great, Drew, meeting you at the New York City Marathon, which, of course, is such a festival and crazy anyway. And yeah, I mean, you can imagine, there I was. We hadn't even had time to do Facebook alerts or anything to let people know I was going to be there. They just sort of saw my sign and started lining up. So it was great. It's flattering. But I got to say, it's also very touching, because these people have given body and soul to be at the any marathon. I mean, it's not running the race that's difficult. It's actually getting there and getting to the start line. And these people have a million stories, and they're all emotional, and they're very emotional at the time. And they sort of fall into your arms, you know, weeping and telling you their life story. And so I come away from those things both extremely exhausted but extremely energized. Does that make sense? You know, that they share that with me? For a long time, I felt, you know, terribly responsible for hearing all their stories, but then I felt really kind of grateful. So yeah, it's an amazing experience.
And for you to be able to, you know, what I thought was, I don't know, extraordinary was that you talked to people. There's a big lineup and there people wanted to get in there and talk to you, but you actually spoke with them and talked with them. I think that meant so much. How are you able to, I don't know, remain a real type of person that cares about, still care? I mean, I'm only saying that because you have those other types of public figures or people that have been in and around the media and been successful in their life, and they don't really care. They don't seem to take that extra time like you did.
If somebody's willing to wait in line for you, they deserve, you know, a lot of attention. And I do. I give, and people don't seem to mind to wait. You know, I apologize to people in line. I say, look, I'm sorry you've been standing there 45 minutes. And they say, I don't care because you're going to take time with me too. I'll tell you what, Drew. I mean, you know, I'm not there just to sell books and to fob people off. They're becoming a part of my life, and I apparently am a part of their life. I mean, I think everybody deserves time of day. As I say, their stories are incredible. It's going to be really easy to write the next book. All I have to do is just recall a few of those stories. And, you know, everybody thinks my story is amazing, but oh man, you know, every single person in that race, 50,000 people, everybody has an incredible story.
Yeah, that was unreal. I know exactly what you mean when you say that it was, you know, energizing and exhausting. And, you know, when I got out of New York, I felt like I was drained a bit. And, you know, it was just that internal buzz that New York has. And then on top of it, this marathon that, you know, it's world renowned. You actually won this in 1974. What was that like?
Oh, gosh, I want to tell you, you know, people are amazed when I say that I won the New York City Marathon, but it was one of the worst days of my life. Because what happened is I was really ready to go under 3 hours. I had been working very, very hard. And I mean, I have to work very hard because I'm not a real natural talented athlete. So I was working very, very hard to go under 3 hours, was totally ready. And the day of the race, it was a total freak day. It had been beautiful, cool autumn weather. And the New York City Marathon in those days was in early September. So what happened is I woke up the next morning for the race, and it was already, you guys do Celsius, so what is it, 90 degrees, 95 degrees Fahrenheit. So what is that, about 34, 35? Yep. And horrible humidity, foggy humidity. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do a personal best under those conditions. And it was 4 laps of Central Park in those days, very, very hilly, much harder than it is actually running in New York now. But that's the way it was in those days. And I decided I had to go for it. It was the day of the race, and there wasn't any choice. It was the day of the race. We're all going to suffer. As it turns out, I ran a 3:07, and I was really, really sad because it took everything out of me. I was gone. You know, I won. But there's always a funny story and always kind of a light at the end of a rainbow or something, which was that, of course, I actually did win the New York City Marathon, which is something nobody can ever take away from you. And as it turned out, because of the conditions, it was the biggest margin of victory in the history of the race and will continue forever to be. It was 27 minutes, my victory. And so forever, I'm always going to be a little media footnote. And interestingly enough, Drew, really interesting, I'm the last New York City woman to have ever won the New York City Marathon. So about 2 years ago, Bazunish Diba from Ethiopia, who actually lives in New York now, I was really rooting for her because I was hoping that she could be the next New York woman to win it. But alas, she didn't. That still may happen, but it's an interesting kind of footnote to that history of the race.
Was she close to winning it?
Yes, she led the race and then it got passed toward the end. She finished, I don't know if it was second that year or third, but she's been a real contender for a couple of times. And of course, her time is like, what? I'm not going to say it's an hour faster than mine, but it's like 45 minutes or something. So it just shows you how times have changed.
Yeah, running's changed a bit, it sounds like.
It definitely has. I mean, for women, it's been phenomenal. And I hope that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today, because for women, it's amazing, Drew. I mean, we're talking about a social revolution here, and one that's happened in my own lifetime and one that I've been a part of. And it's really very, very interesting where it's going and what it means.
Well, yeah, that's something I wanted to get into. I was actually had John Stanton on for an interview, and he was saying that it was the opposite. It used to be a male-dominated sport, and now it seems like there's a whole lot more women, you know, coming up, and you have a large part in that. Tell our listeners your story, like your beginning story of the Boston Marathon and how you started to change the sport.
Well, and give my regards to John Stanton. I'm a pioneer in many ways, and he certainly is too. He transformed the sport in many ways, not only through retail and making it accessible to people, but through his meat runs at his stores. He got many, many people, and women especially, out on the roads running and helped them achieve amazing things. So he's a remarkable man. Okay, so what happened was, I began running at about age 12, was fueled with incredible empowerment, and then from then went on to Syracuse University, where I studied journalism because I wanted to be a sports writer. And while I was there, I continued to run. There were no sports for women, and I continued to run on my own, and I decided I would ask the men's track coach if I could run with the men's team, and he said not officially, but I could come out and train with them. And that's where I met a little volunteer coach, and I say little because he was a tiny little guy who was a university mailman who had been training with these guys for about 30 years. And this guy took pity on me because I was so slow, and he was an ex-marathoner, and he regaled me with stories every day. He started jogging with me and regaled me with stories of the marathon, and I fell in love with the idea of doing it, and he didn't believe a woman could do it, even though I said other women had in the past, not with any fanfare or really even any recognition, and even Roberta Gibb had run at Boston the year before, 1966. She jumped out of the bushes and ran, but she didn't wear a number, and so there was not a real big fuss made about her in any way, but she ran well. But my coach didn't believe this. He didn't believe any woman ever ran a marathon. And finally, we argued, and he said that if I showed him in practice, he'd be the first person to take me. So I think everybody knows the story that I proved to him in practice that I could do it. He was so impressed. He became like an evangelist, even helped me sign up for the race, saying, "You have to sign up for Boston. This is a serious race. You can't just go and show up and jump in." And so I did all the paperwork and paid my $2 entry fee, which always gets a laugh. And I was a card-carrying member of the AAU. Come on, I had to follow the rules. And of course, what happened in the day of the race, it was snowing and sleeting. So I was in a heavy warm-up suit, and I looked like one of the guys from the distance. We were all dressed alike. We were all wearing everything we owned. And 2 miles into the race, the race director lost his temper when he saw a girl was in his race wearing bib numbers, jumped off the press truck, went after me, attacked me, and grabbed me and screamed at me, "Get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers," and tried to pull my bib numbers off. And my coach couldn't get him away from me because he was a little tiny guy. But my burly boyfriend, ex-All-American football player, who decided to run the Boston Marathon at the very last moment because if a girl could do it, he could do it. Another story, Drew, threw a cross-body block into the official and sent the official flying, and I went on to finish. Now, okay, so you're laughing, okay? We're all laughing. It's hilarious in the retelling, but it was terrible. At the time, it really was. I was a 20-year-old girl running my first big race. I knew I could do it. I was really proud of being there. I wasn't there for any political reason. I was there because it was a reward from my coach, and I was running kind of my dream race. I mean, it was like the pilgrim going to Mecca, But it changed my life because at the moment when my boyfriend decked the official, I suddenly realized that no matter what happened, I had to finish this race. And the press truck was bearing down on us and really aggressive questioning of me as I was trying to run. They were desperate for me to drop out. And the more they wanted me to drop out, the more I was determined to finish. And I told my coach, I said, "I'm finishing on my hands and my knees if I have to." And how does a 20-year-old girl make a decision like that? And I've often thought about it. And I think, it's because, I had been running since I was 12 and I had a whole lot of empowerment and I felt really strong about it. And it wasn't until about Heartbreak Hill time, 21 miles, what are we out at there, about 34 Ks or something, right when you get kind of desperate in a race, I started getting this epiphany, as you do when you got an endorphin overload. And and realize it wasn't the official's fault, but that women were never going to have the courage and fearlessness to run and to do something like this unless they had an opportunity. So I figured somehow I'm going to finish this race. I'm going to become a better athlete, and I'm going to create those opportunities. And that's the beginning. When I finished the race, I felt better than I did at any other point in the whole effort. And I began organizing and began lobbying, getting other women together, creating clubs, and then mostly creating events and realizing that sponsorship was going to be the thing that was going to make the difference. Took those journalism writing skills in my back pocket to the table and started writing business proposals. Got Avon Cosmetics to believe in what I was writing, and they underwrote a program for one race that eventually became a global series of 400 races in 27 countries for over 1 million women. And then we leveraged that with the International Olympic Committee with the data and statistics that we could provide, and we got the women's marathon into the Olympic Games in 1984. So it was an incredible dream that was born out of adversity. And I love telling people the story because we all have tough things in our life. And often if you take the tough thing and you turn it around, you can make it the best thing that ever happened in your life. You can, if there's something lacking in life, the gap, filling the gap always creates interesting opportunity and maybe even business. And certainly in my case, it fulfilled a dream. It's never over, Drew. Here I am, practically 70 years old, and I've just now started a nonprofit called 261 Fearless, named after that bib number, where we are taking the empowerment message now to women around the world globally through clubs, training, events, merchandising, but mostly because what exists today that didn't exist back in 1967 or even in the 80s is the power of the internet. And we're beginning to communicate with these women in very far-flung, fearful places. So we're hoping to get running to those women and help them change their lives just as strongly as we did before, in maybe even a bigger, better way, because we're able to reach women that we never could reach before. So there you go.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say. I do want to take a step back. We'll get into more of this 261 Fearless and what you're doing now. I'm interested to hear more about that actual date, because that really was the turning point. That changed everything in your life. I think it changed everything in the sport. What was it like? What was your mindset when you were going to go in that race? Was there any doubt? Was there fear? Did you know that there was going to be such a backlash before you signed up?
No. You know, I said to my coach when we were working on the paperwork, I said, you know what? I think this might be against the rules. Why haven't other women signed up and run in the race? And he said they haven't signed up because they don't believe they can run, and nobody believes they can run either. And I said, but maybe it's against the rules. And he said, no, here's the rule book. And actually, there was no rule written forbidding women in long distance running. The longest event available that they said women's running was cross country, 1.5 miles. But when it came to the marathon, it didn't have anything about gender. You know, they had women's track and field, and then they had men's track and field, and then they had the marathon. And on the entry form, there was nothing about gender. And so, I mean, I said, hey, look, I think we're pushing a point. And he said, no, we're not pushing a point. You know, it would say it's for men only if it's for men only. And I said, okay. I think I said, but I said, I'm going to be noticed when I get there, I said to my coach. And he said, I know, and I'm proud of you. I mean, I thought that was really amazing because it came from a 50-year-old guy, you know, here I just turned 20. You know, he seemed ancient to me. And obviously, he had come through a complete change of thinking about what women could do. It was really amazing. So no, when we went in, for me, it was nothing political at all. Now, maybe my coach Arnie had something up his sleeve. Maybe he wanted to force the issue, but I don't know why, because he was just a modest little man. You know, I think he was just proud of me and wanted me to be treated equally. I was there just beaming with excitement because we had run 31 miles in practice. You know, we'd run 50K. So I had no doubt that I could finish the race. But did I have doubt? Sure. Like anybody going to the start line of a marathon, you know, anything can happen. You know, the weather can be bad. A dog can bite you. You know, it might not be your day. You might get an attack of diarrhea or something. You know, all these things are part of what makes the marathon actually alluring, because there's no certainty. And so I had those kinds of doubts, but I had no real doubts. And I, And the men around me just loved me. They were very, very welcoming. I often say, you know, women's running would be nowhere where it is today if it hadn't been for the generosity and the sense of equality of men.
So the men at the race were welcoming?
Absolutely. They said, I wish my wife would run. I wish my girlfriend would run. Give me some tips for her. And the reason the officials didn't see me at the start was because we were all in those baggy warm-up suits. I mean, the snow was coming down, the sleet was coming down, and they were already late and they're trying to get everybody, you know, lined up and into the race. So I figured, okay, well, no big deal. If I had been in shorts and a t-shirt, Drew, everything might have been different. There might have been a big confrontation right at the start.
So, okay, I didn't know. I thought it was just men in general that was against this.
No, no. Men were wonderful. In running, they were wonderful. Now, I wouldn't say the same for gridiron football or basketball. Those are different sports. Those are more combative team sports. This is very individualistic. I believe that runners are really quite different people mentally, and male runners and female runners. It's a wonderful sport. It's almost gender-free. We're out there together just trying to cover the distance and trying to do the best we as individuals can do. I find it unique in the whole world.
Of course, it's difficult. Like you went and did, you went and, you know, completed the marathon. You had all this controversy going on. What kind of ignited you to push forward and keep doing? Did it have anything to do with changing the mindset of your coach and understanding you could reach more people? Where did it come from that you wanted to empower women?
Well, you know, when during the race, I was pretty pissed off. I got to tell you, I mean, I really was. I really felt this official's, he was out of control. He was angry, la la. And it wasn't, as they say, until I got to about mile 22 when the anger dissipated, because you can't run that far and stay mad. Okay. So the anger dissipated and I got the epiphany about creating the opportunities for women. But for a while, I was annoyed with women because I thought, why aren't they here? Why don't they get it? You know, running is so good for you, so easy and cheap and accessible. And that's when I thought, how stupid I am, you know, that these women haven't had an opportunity to run. They, you know, my parents encouraged me when I was 12, and I was lucky enough to play sports in high school. And then I met Arnie and the team I ran on with at Syracuse. Those guys were wonderful. And even in training, all the guys we would train with were very, very supportive of me. So I suddenly realized it's not the women's fault. They're just afraid, and I need to create the opportunities for them. So that's what sprung from that. So did it become political at that? Then it did. After the official attacked me, of course it became political. And I had been very, very naive and unaware of, I believed in the women's movement. I believed in equal pay, but I didn't believe in being anybody's face. And now I was doing something that was clearly in the establishment's face. And so I had to really contend with that, because I never thought of myself as a rabble rouser. But you know, once you start something, you got to see it through. So it was a real growing up time. I often say, in fact, you may have seen a film clip that ends on this, which is I started the Boston Marathon as a girl and I ended it as a grown woman.
Did you feel like you didn't have a choice after you started all this, that you had to keep going?
Yeah, I do, because I have a huge sense of responsibility. You know, that's something we talked about at the beginning, you know, when all those people are lined up, you know, to meet me or something. I do feel responsible for them. I feel responsible for helping them in any way I can. And so also in life, I think I feel maybe overly responsible. Maybe I take it all too seriously, but I certainly do believe in this case that I think I had started something and I needed to see it through to its successful conclusion. I really felt, actually, interestingly enough, it's interesting how life goes. I felt when we got the women's marathon into the Olympic Games, and when Joan Benoit Samuelson won that race, changed world thinking about what women could do. You know, 2.2 billion people saw it on TV. I was lucky enough to do the TV commentary for ABC for that race. I said, okay, that's it. We've come full circle. We've arrived. But like an athlete who gets to a certain point in training and they think just because they won a medal, you know, that's the best, then they look up ahead of them and they realize how much work there really is yet to go, how much more there is yet to achieve, how much responsibility needs to be taken for other people. So you look around and you say, just because we got the women's marathon in the Olympic Games doesn't help the women necessarily who can't go out of their houses alone, can't get a passport, can't travel, not allowed an education, can't drive a car, you know, are mired in poverty and completely in fearful situations. So, you know, can running help those women? Yeah. You know, we've seen it in Africa completely change villages. We've seen it transform societies in Southeast Asia and in Japan. I mean, just running has done it before and it'll do it again. And so we've taken on now a goal that is really quite massive. But I'm buoyed by it because running never fails. running is transformational. What can I tell you?
All right, Catherine, we're going to leave you with that. That was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for everything that you're doing in, you know, in your communities, in the world. It's so inspiring to be able to sit here across from you and hear your stories. And now I'm in the position to help share them as well. So thank you for that for us.
You're so welcome, Drew. I enjoy talking to all of you.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for this edition of Transformations Through Running. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for tuning in and being a part of our community. I think it's amazing. I really do. What she went through. I mean, when you look back, hindsight is 2020, of course, but you look back and you say, wow, that was a pretty cool thing that she did or that she was able to do. And it doesn't, you don't think of it much now because of all the people that run marathons and all the women that run the Boston Marathon, for example. But we don't realize how strong she had to be to get through that, to first of all, to get there and do it. And then to like, people, I mean, it's just absurd to me, like what the extent of people would do for, I don't know, tradition or for their own beliefs, but because of gender alone, it gets absurd to me. But of course, that's in the past. However, during that time, I couldn't imagine how stressful it was for her and how challenging it was for her to be able to do that and for her to be able to, you know, change the running industry as she has and continue to. She's continuing to do great things, as you heard. And it's just impressive. And I'm so grateful that she took the time to be on her show and shared some of her time with us and some of her experiences, what she was able to do. So thank you all so much for being here. We always appreciate your time to come in and listen to the shows. If you have anyone, if you're the runner and you want to come and share your story, please let me know. Shoot us a message. I'd be more than happy to entertain the idea to bring you on. And if you know anyone in particular that would be has a great story or a cool interview, bring them to my attention and we'd be happy to have a conversation to see if they want to join us on the show. All past shows are going up on trueformlife.com. You can check out all past shows there. That's where we specialize in fitness and nutrition, activity, reducing stress. That's something that we can definitely help out with. If you're a runner and you're looking to take it to the next level, you want to make some of your own PRs or PBs. Personal records or personal best, however you say that. We'd love to have you on we'd love to work with you if we can in any way. We're on Instagram.com/DrewTadia. If you're listening to the show, we would love it if you took a picture of yourself or you took a picture of something and you tagged us listening to the show. That's always really cool. I love when I see those. And of course, we share everything that we're tagged in. That's a pretty cool thing that we do. We're also on Facebook.com/TrueFormLife. So we put together across our platforms, we put together nutrition, fitness, activity levels. We just finished a 7-day, 7-minute Tabata challenge on our Facebook page, on our Trueform, Facebook.com/TrueFormLife. So we do these many times. They're free, sometimes they're paid. But if you'd like to join us for one of our challenges, you can do that. You'll just have to follow us along there. We do about one a month or one every 2 months. So we definitely post when those are coming up next. So that's something that's of interest to you. You're welcome to join us. Be sure to check out our other podcast and nationally syndicated radio show called Exploring Mind and Body. I bring on top guests and I interview them from around the world to talk about holistic health, nutrition, fitness, lifestyle, mental health, recovery. We cover it all around wellness. That's on all your other platforms. You can find that on exploringmindandbody.com, or you can also find that on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or I guess it's not iTunes. I should get that right. It's Apple Podcast now, I believe. At any rate, you could be listening to this on Apple and you know what I'm talking about. So all you have to do is search Drew Tadia and my various podcasts or other interviews from that I've been on other shows will come up, or you can search Exploring Mind and Body and you'll find it quite easily. So once again, thank you so much for being here, and I hope to catch you on the next show.